Hello. It's 7 o'clock and you're listening to WBAI in New York. And it's time.
We're sorry. The number you have reached, 99.5 WBAI, is now off the hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bump for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bump.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, indeed. I'm over here. Right there.
We have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Hello.
Alex, you sound like you're a million miles away. You okay there?
I'm about 90 miles away.
Okay. So. All right. Wasn't sure about the microphone there. Well, we weren't on last week, and what a week not to be on, because so much has happened in the 2 weeks since we have been here, and I guess predictably we're going to be focusing on events of the world, because there's really nothing more important to focus on, and there's plenty that has to do with the hacker community, as you've probably seen in the news. Yeah, all kinds of things are being hacked left and right. We're going to get into that in just a moment. However, this caution for you hackers out there who might have good intentions. Russian Space Agency says that hacking satellites is an act of war. So if you're bored and feeling that you're going to get justice by hacking a satellite, you may find yourselves at war with Vladimir Putin. You know, I guess, can you be at war? Can a hacker be at war with another country? Because you don't know where the hackers are coming from. You absolutely have no idea many times if they know how to cover their tracks. Well, the story reads, Russia will consider any cyber attacks targeting Russian satellite infrastructure as an act of war, as the country's space agency director said in a TV interview. Dmitry Rogozin, the current head of the Russian Roscosmos State Space Corporation, added that such attempts would also be considered crimes and investigated by Russia's law enforcement agencies. Funny that the act of war comes first, and then also it's a crime. So after we obliterate you, we're going to charge you with something. Because disabling the satellite group of any country is generally a... this is a word for you, Alex. A casus belli. Is that some kind of Latin term? Alex isn't there. Where'd Alex go? Yeah. Alex, you can't take field trips in the middle of the show. What is
casus? I tend to a wood-burning stove. But to answer your question, casus belli is a cause of war.
Cause of war. Wow. Yeah. We will be looking for those who organized it. He said that sounds very ominous. We'll send all necessary materials to the Federal Security Service. Wait, he's giving us the names of all their internal agencies here, the Investigative Committee and the Prosecutor General's Office for Relevant Criminal Cases to be opened. While not directly hit by hackers, satellite systems have been used before in cyber attacks. with the Russian-backed Turla cyber espionage group famously hijacking satellite internet links to deliver malware to remote areas. On Monday, Anonymous linked Network Battalion 65, NB65, claimed it hacked and shut down some Roscosmos servers. Rogozin denied their claims, saying the Russian Space Agency's activity control centers operate normally, and called NB65 scammers and petty swindlers. Oh, it's on now. Really? You're gonna be like that? NB65 scammers and petty swindlers. But that will not go unremarked. I can guarantee that. 2 days later, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Roscosmos asked for guarantees Wednesday that OneWeb satellites, a part of a future worldwide network, providing internet broadband services, OneWeb satellites, will not be used for military purposes, as Reuters first reported. Rogozin added that the Soyuz rocket planned to put 36 OneWeb satellites in orbit would not launch unless the UK government doesn't withdraw from OneWeb and sell its share. It will not launch unless the UK government doesn't withdraw and sell its share. That's awfully confusing. I could see the UK easily doing the exact opposite unintentionally. These demands were later dismissed by UK Business and Energy Secretary Kwasi Kwarteng, who refused any negotiations and said that the UK government would not be selling its share. "I give you 2 days to think," Rogozin replied. It's so James Bond, evil villain. "There will be no guarantees of non-military use of the system. There will be no system." And then, did you see the graphic of the space station just kind of falling apart? They sent that over too as kind of a threat that that they're going to let the International Space Station fall apart. It's really, you know, this is just one element of the many things that we've been hearing over the past couple of weeks, referring, of course, to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the long anticipated Russian invasion of Ukraine. But I got to say, it's far worse than even I thought it might be. And doesn't seem to be getting any better anytime soon. Folks, I'll let you speak if you have any insight or observations.
I'm just a bit nonplussed because, you know, before all this started, we had actually marked it on our calendars. We were planning today as the day that we were going to start hacking Russian satellites live on the radio. But I guess we're not doing that now.
Well, it's difficult really to find words for what has happened over the last 2 weeks. And one thing I will note, too, is I also feel like whenever we are preempted, something happens during that week that is akin to a world-changing, life-changing event, and we're never on the air at that moment to talk about it. I really, really wish we were on the air last week. I'll say I've been glued to CNN, MSNBC, foreign media, watching this, watching from the sidelines, feeling probably like most of you, fairly helpless in terms of what we can do and what we cannot do in particular. I mean, Emmanuel brings up some really good points here in that as people with special skill sets, we may feel compelled to act in one way or another on behalf of the Ukrainians. And especially since the President Zelensky had put out a call for people to join the Ukrainian cyber army or whatever it's called, the IT brigade or something like that. But I will say, and I will caution, that's still hacking and accessing unauthorized systems without proper authorization is still a crime under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, regardless of whether or not you're doing it on behalf of a foreign power or within a war. So I think people have to be really cautious, be really careful. And Emmanuel also points out the fact that if we do have some type of situation where a cyber operation can be misinterpreted, and that cyber operation may look like it's coming from a state, but it is actually coming from an individual, this can really escalate things. It can make things worse. And I've got a lot of theories. I'm sure that we'll get into. I don't need to get into them all right now, but as the show progresses, I've got a lot of theories about, you know, why we haven't seen too many cyber operations spilling over into the real world. The real world being, you know, the world outside Ukraine, the world outside a war zone. I don't mean to imply that what's happening in Ukraine is not real by any means or stretch of the imagination, but I think there's a lot to unravel, and I hope we get through a bit of it this show.
Yeah, well, anything we do is only going to be a slice. It's not going to be complete. It's going to be frustrating because there are so many things we do want to get to. But just to speak to your point for a moment about being concerned about violating certain laws. First of all, it's a good point that people with good intentions may do the wrong thing and cause misinterpretation and hurt the wrong people. That's certainly possible if you don't know what you're doing. But as far as worrying about violating certain statutes, you know, to me, murder is something that is a crime, whether it's inside of a war or invasion or not. And I think that is really what we should be focusing on, not worrying overly about, is this going to violate a particular cyber law? And I'm not saying people should act recklessly. I'm just saying that I understand. I understand when people fight back in various ways. And right now, I don't think I'm alone feeling powerless here, feeling that there isn't enough that can be done to stop what we are all witnessing and what we know is going on, and friends of ours, people that we've met, people that, you know, are from a part of the world that shows so much promise, so much growth, so much, just so much amazing interactions, humor. It's just, for those who haven't been to that particular section, whether it's Moldova or Ukraine or even Russia, there is so much there being destroyed right now, whether it's through actual bombs or whether it's through a totalitarian state that is being imposed on people. It's scary. We have to pay attention. We have to speak up, and we can't be cowed by anybody, people here, people over there.
Yeah, I think fear and silence has brought us to this brink, this intense moment. But I agree with Emmanuel in the sense that it strikes me that the stories we have, the stuff we're going to talk about, not one bit of it is going to be about someone getting in trouble for doing something about what has been going on and to Russia. I don't see any cases being built on that right now. And I think it would be laughable if anything like that was brought to bear in this moment over this. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, let's look at a couple of things that have been happening. Basically, the Kremlin's website went down. This is late in February, in the early days of the invasion. We're still in the early days. It's only been 2 weeks, but let's say the first week. The Kremlin's website went down, and Russian TV channels were hacked to play Ukrainian songs. So this is the kind of thing that if you have the ability to do something like that, I say go for it. And I don't care how that's interpreted. People have to express themselves, whether it's by hacking a website, whether it's by taking over a broadcast. You know, justice has to prevail. What people in Russia are seeing, they're basically not seeing other sides of the story at all. They're not allowed to. If you broadcast something that that expresses a different perspective, you face 15 years in prison. And when it gets to that point, you have to fight back. You have to do something to override that. And yes, you know, protect yourself by all means so that it doesn't come back to haunt you. But by no means shy away from doing something if you have the ability to do something to fight back.
Yeah, there was an elegant story. I don't have a story. I don't know if you saw it either or anybody else did. But it was text being overlaid in Russian CCTV systems, basically talking about people who were attacked. And I think it was an anonymous-related technique. But the tactic itself speaks to the information clampdown and getting reporting in there, because widely in Russia, they don't believe this is happening because they're not being told about it. And there is all of this media that's been pulled apart and pulled out since, you know, in the last 2 weeks. So elegant things like that that can get information in, I think, coincide with some of the policies you've been hearing about internet and cutting off different places. Like that's a different aspect of, you know, not wanting to do business or provide services in a place that does not necessarily align with the rules-based system.
Now, we talked about the threat against anybody hacking satellites that came from the Russian Space Agency spokesperson. But the Hacker Collective Anonymous has also declared its own war against the Russian government after the Ukrainian invasion. Your Anon News Twitter account declared last Thursday the group was currently involved in operations against the Russian Federation. We want the Russian people to understand that we know it's hard for them to speak out against their dictator for fear of reprisals. We, as a collective, want only peace in the world. We want a future for all of humanity. So while people around the globe smash your internet providers to bits, understand that it's entirely directed at the actions of the Russian government and Putin. And this story you might have heard of as well, also involving Anonymous. They changed the call sign of a super yacht reportedly belonging to Russian President Vladimir Putin in the early days of the invasion. According to independent journalist Ryan Gallagher, the hacktivist group took credit for the cyber attack, during which they changed the ship's call sign to FCKPTN. Figure out what that is on your own. And its destination to hell. Yeah. Putin reportedly has a $97 million luxury yacht called Graceful. A group of anonymous hackers, Anonymous the Collective, on Saturday figured out a way to mess with maritime traffic data and made it look like the yacht had crashed into Ukraine's Snake Island and then changed its destination to hell. Bravo. I mean, there's no other word for that. And if there can be a thousand things like this going on at the same time, all the better. It doesn't substitute for what the brave people in Ukraine are doing right now with their resistance, whether it's standing up to the tanks that are barreling through their villages or actually on the front lines. But it's something. It's something to let you know the rest of the world is behind you as well.
Yeah, if they want chaos, they get chaos. Mm-hmm. They sow chaos, they'll get it right back.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah. I think there's so much that can be done with respect to it, but I do have to disagree with you guys to a certain extent, though. I think a measure of restraint does need to be shown here because of just the possibility of this escalating. I mean, we're dealing with somebody that has been universally condemned as being a bit off the rails mentally. Somebody who's been saber rattling with nuclear war, and this is just a situation where, you know, we don't really want to mess with it a bit too much. And I really can't imagine a situation of people putting their necks out and getting in trouble for doing things that they probably should not be doing. I think authorities aren't going to turn a blind eye to that. So I would exercise some restraint with respect to what you're doing in any kind of cyber operation. And what the New York Times actually reported about 2 days ago, too, is that there were some form of U.S. cyber operations that were ongoing. And, of course, there has been some reports of Russian cyber operations within Ukraine that relates to wiper malware. Something known as the Hermetic Wiper was seen spreading throughout various organizations within Ukraine. And this is essentially a data destruction piece of malware, nothing incredibly complicated. And so most of what people have been talking about in the media with respect to cyber operations in Ukraine has been that perhaps the U.S. is there. Cyber operations were apparently moved from Kyiv to someplace outside of Ukraine fairly recently. And likely the focus of that has probably been neutralizing the efforts of the Russians and the GRU, which is possibly why we don't see a huge amount of spillover just yet with respect to Russian operations. I mean, something I think that we should definitely talk about here, too, is the fact that there was a Russian ransomware group last week, Conti, with whom I'm very familiar, unfortunately, and they had almost immediately come out in support of Vladimir Putin and Russia and their invasion and incursion into Ukraine. And then almost immediately thereafter, I'd say maybe 12, 14 hours later, they walked that back a little bit. But in the meantime, a Ukrainian security researcher had released a massive amount of leaked data, data of the Conti jabber logs or their chat logs amongst themselves and amongst the ransomware negotiators that were speaking on behalf of the organizations who had been hit by Conti and their ransomware. And this is a huge amount of data. Not only is it these chat logs, but it's also training materials. And this Ukrainian security researcher really hit back by releasing some of the Conti source code that they used for their ransomware operations. So there's a lot being done there. And I'll tell you, taking a look at that, the Conti logs and the chat logs has been extraordinarily illuminating in terms of how they negotiate, what their operations are, and who their connections are outside of the ransomware world. It's really fascinating. This is just stuff that I think is going to shake out for a really, really long time. There may be some collateral spillover there too, because a lot of these companies and organizations that were hit by this Russian ransomware gang that's known to be known to have friendly connections with the Russian government, may not have actually reported a lot of those breaches and ransomware events to the something like the Information Commissioner's Office or the regulatory authorities to which they were supposed to report that. Now they're released in these logs, and so that may be shaking out for some time to come as well. But so much happening, a lot of tit for tat there. I think we do have to exercise some restraint, though.
Well, if I could speak to that for a moment, sure. I understand. I understand what you're saying, and to a degree, I'm in somewhat of a consensus with that. When you're dealing with somebody who's not necessarily completely sane with a lot of power, but you have to draw the line someplace, because if you're going to basically say, well, we can't antagonize him too much because he's going to do something else, basically then he has all the control. I grew up with bullies. I know how this works. And I know that if you simply keep yielding and keep giving in, they just take more and more and more, and they don't care. And at some point, you have to do something. Are you familiar with what mobbing is? If you go to the East Village, there's a hawk there named Christo. Ask him. He knows what mobbing is. This is when small birds attack a much larger bird and drive him out of their area. It's fascinating to watch. You know, little tiny birds that you never would think would want to come near a hawk because, you know, they're the hawk's prey. But they succeed in making sure that he does not act, or she does not act, aggressively and destroy their community. And they all get together. Small birds from all around basically unite for this one purpose. We need to do mobbing. We all need to do mobbing. It's not something that's coming from a particular country, a particular regime. It's people power. And that's what we're seeing. If there's anything good that has come out of this, we're seeing the incredible amount of people power, both within Russia, within Ukraine, around the world. And that is a match that no dictator can survive if it's sustained, if it's strong enough. Go ahead, Rob.
I think there's definitely something to be said for what Alex was saying about restraint. The thing we have to take into account is that right now tensions are high, emotions are high. It's a crappy situation, you know, any way you look at it. And it's not always easy to find to figure out what is the best thing to do, what one should be doing, how one can best be helpful. And I think one thing we could focus on is ways in which the hacker community can be helpful directly to the people in Ukraine who are in the middle of this, who are dealing with this, and who are the ones who know what's best. You know, I could look at the news, you know, from one direction or the other and think that I've come up with a perfect solution. But you know, me sitting on my butt here in New York, in America, thousands of miles away, I am not the expert. And so I want to hear from people out there who have maybe found or are building ways that we can interact, get in touch with people who are in the thick of this and be of direct help to them. If you send us email, oth@2600.com, tweet at us at Hacker Radio Show, or give us a phone call when we do overtime at the end of the hour. I want to hear from people out there who actually know and maybe work with ways that are of actual value to the people under threat right now in Ukraine. I think, and I'm also thinking a lot of, like, before this went down, one of our big stories was how a friend of the show has been treated like a foreign asset and given a huge prison sentence for having a conversation with some Koreans about cryptocurrency. So, you know, I don't think things are going to get lighter in the way of how people who are caught doing things in an unauthorized manner are treated. So be safe out there. Be careful. Make the most informed decisions you can with the best data you can possibly get hold of, and go from there.
Yeah, and let's talk to each other. Let's share that information, as you said. And at 8 o'clock, to give further details to what Rob was referring to, we have an extension of the program called Overtime. It takes place on YouTube on channel 2600. That's our channel. And you can call us. You can call us live and be on the program. So if there are people out there in that region, we certainly would, you know, if you're not too busy doing other things, we certainly want to hear your perspective, but certainly understand if that's the last thing you have time for right now.
Yeah, I just think we should do absolutely everything else before things escalate. You don't want to get to a point like that and say where you're looking at too little and too late. That's not an option anymore.
Now, I wanted to look at this this story that's been circulating, saying that Russia is about to leave the internet. And in fact, I'm even seeing a date. I'm seeing March 11th, the day after tomorrow. With all the reaction against Russia, all the companies cutting off services of one sort or another, basically, we're looking at something known as a splinternet, which basically means Russia would no longer be part of the internet. In 2019, the Russian government said it has successfully tested a system known as RUNET, R-U-N-E-T. At the time, few understood the need for it, but now in the context of the Ukraine invasion, kind of makes a bit of sense. Russian ISPs were asked to effectively configure the internet within their borders as if it were a giant intranet, which is a private network of websites that don't speak to the outside world. The initiative involved restricting the points at which Russia's version of the net connected to its global counterpart. It appears Russia is retesting those systems now. In a memo from the Russian government, ISPs were asked to beef up their security and connect to domain name system, DNS servers, in Russia. Some thought the memo and the date for completion, as I mentioned, on March 11th, meant Russia intended to cut itself off imminently. What do you guys think of this?
I mean, my first question becomes, what happens to the TLD.ru? Does that just go away?
No, it would still be there. My understanding of this, and I may be wrong, is that, you know, this would be an alternate domain name system or some kind of alternate system of lookups, whereby you wouldn't be using the ordinary domain name system that the rest of the internet is connected to. This would be a separate network that would only exist within Russia. And there have been earlier incantations of various versions of alternate DNS or alternate domain name systems in the past. None of them have really caught on, but back in 2011, 2012, when ICANN had been advocating the expansion of the domain name system through its new GTLD program, or the new generic top-level domain program, by which you could apply for brands and things like .coke, .pepsi, .watches, generic terms, and .art. I actually represented an applicant for .art, and there was in this alternate DNS already a top-level domain for .art. And, you know, we got into a little spat with them going back and forth. But so there have been early incantations. Nothing has really ever taken off. And a lot of this, rather the success of any kind of alternate DNS function would rely entirely on the inherent I think the inherent technology and the inherent connections that exist within whatever network that is. So, for instance, if there is a vibrant tech community that all belongs to RuNet, and you can connect to something that looks like Facebook or Twitter, and you have all these different services that you can access on RuNet, well, then maybe it would have a chance of surviving. But Russia doesn't have that. Russia doesn't have a vibrant domestic tech community. I mean, I think that the height of Russian innovation with respect to high technology over the last couple of years, as I've seen it, has been the Internet Research Agency over in St. Petersburg that tried to disrupt our 2016 election, with some effect, by the way. I mean, they certainly did a good job of it. But they don't have a lot of this internal infrastructure to run their own DNS system, to run something like RuNet, and actually make it successful, in my opinion. But there has been talk too about in other circles in the wider DNS, the real DNS that we are used to in terms of the thing that ICANN regulates, in removing something like .su or .ru and preventing those domains from resolving. That I think is more dangerous though, because when you're removing something from the actual internet that we all use and the whole world is a part of right now, that's going to have a huge effect on the security and the stability of the internet. These are the things that ICANN is charged with protecting and maintaining. And the other thing that bears mentioning, too, is that ICANN does not have a lot of historical authority with respect to ccTLDs or the country code top-level domains, the things like .ru or .de for Germany or even .us for the United States. All of those have really been run by the countries themselves. They set the policies. There's some crossover in terms of what they do and how they do it and back-end infrastructure and things. But more fundamentally, I disagree with the disconnection of large swaths of the internet and countries in particular, especially when there is a war that the domestic population in Russia disagrees with. I just think philosophically it's a bad idea, because even though the Russians are really good at spreading disinformation and that a lot of that comes from within their borders and exits to the rest of the world, if you limit the spread of disinformation from Russia, that's inevitably going to limit the spread of information entering Russia. And with local crackdowns on protests, journalism, that's going to leave the Russian population a lot more vulnerable than it ever was to disinformation from the Russian government itself, if that's the only source of information that's out there.
Don't you think that's what the Russian government wants to do? And by the way, I just want to clarify, when you say the Russians are good at spreading disinformation, we're talking about the Russian government.
That's
because
correct.
The Russian people, I think, have a very strong sense of what is true and what is not true. I also think they have a vibrant technology scene as well. It's just not given the support that it deserves. What my question, though, if something like this were to happen, and it would be, well, I know that there are attacks on various Russian agencies and government offices. I think the push to take them off the net is actually coming from within Russia itself. So they basically, the authorities there would have complete control. But would they be able to just simply remap the internet? I'm not exactly sure what the correct term is. But basically take all the top-level domains and just make them do something else instead. For instance, 2600.com can go to, the Ministry of Truth or something. You know, they could basically just have a fake internet. People would not be able to get to anything outside of Russia, but it would appear like they might be. They might think they were. I'm not sure if this is just fantasy or if this is something. If you cut off completely from the rest of the world, it seems like you could make domain names do whatever you want inside the country. Does that make sense, Alex?
I mean, sure. If they were to recreate an entire new, well, you know what? Technically, I guess you could, right? Because a lot of these zone files you can figure out what's in .com and .net and whatnot, and replicate it all, have it resolved to something else, essentially create a series of redirects. But what you would have then is you would be running a different version of .com based on your own DNS servers, based on your own domain name system servers that would be local within your own country. And so you could have Facebook.com resolve to the Russian Ministry of Defense, if you want.
Exactly.
To.
This is not at all an unusual practice. It's widely done, filtering and setting various kinds of parameters and whitelists and blacklists and all kinds of things. There are whole industries, whole sectors dedicated to this in various institutions. There are countries around the world that participate in this. I don't have to list them. You can guess. So there are places that are so filtered and do so much content control and manage it so well, they're all but completely cut off. So that's the trade-off when you implement these things, even in more peaceful times.
I wanted to focus on something else that people are showing support in many, many ways, whether it's by displaying Ukrainian flags, playing Ukrainian music. And this is something we did on the other radio show. We basically focused on something known as interval signals. Now, this goes back to the days of shortwave, which, by the way, might be making a comeback. More on that later. But basically, every country has its own musical chime, and some of this still exists today. Most of it was decades ago. But basically, you would tune to a particular frequency. You would hear a particular chime repeating itself over and over again, and that was your signal that you're tuned to the right frequency for the country you were looking for a broadcast from. You still wouldn't know what language it was going to be in because shortwave stations would broadcast in all different languages, and the frequencies would change throughout the course of a day because atmospheric conditions demand that. So what I'm about to play now is the sound of Ukrainian radio from this actually dates back into the 70s, I believe, but the recording is a bit more recent, so it sounds a little bit better. Now, the reason I've taken a liking to these is because they make great ringtones. And if you change your ringtone to be the interval signal of a particular country, well, people are going to recognize that. A lot of people will recognize that and say, hey, I know that. I know what that is. I know that's Ukrainian. I know that that means something. So what we're going to do is we're going to turn audio down. You might actually hear some background noise. That's us listening in on
Freedom, Maidan Square.
Maidan Square in Kyiv. We just want to hear when things happen. Sometimes the air raid sirens go off, and we're basically riveted watching what's going on there. But I'd like people to just listen for a moment, and if you're able to record it and make it your ringtone, all the better.
You can tell a lot about people around you, if they get a little bit, unsettled, or if they're really happy and they get thrilled when they hear it, you get a little sense of what's going on.
I have all different interval signals on my phone, and nobody ever recognizes them. It's really sad. I guess, if I go to a particular country maybe and have it play, they might recognize it there. But anyway, this is the interval signal for Radio Ukraine. We'll be back right after this.
This is Ukrainian radio.
And that's what it sounds like. Now, you can get a whole lot of interval signals from an amazing site called intervalsignals.net. They're from everywhere, from all different years. And I do suggest using them as ringtones because they sound great and they mean something.
Maybe produce your own or produce one for Off the Hook. Send us your creative and inspired ideas, oth@2600.com.
And as long as I'm giving out websites, here's another really amazing website, RussianEmbassy.net. RussianEmbassy.net. Basically, it's a directory of every consulate, every embassy throughout the world. And not only the address, phone number, fax number, even a telex number. Who uses telex anymore? It's all there. So if you have a message to send or if you want to have a demonstration outside their offices, this is how you do it. So RussianEmbassy.net works throughout the world, every single country. And this is what people need to do. They need to vocalize and make their presence known. It's so important. It's never been more important than this.
I'm really surprised that that still resolves to, you know, a general directory of every single consulate around the world. Is that right, Amanda?
Why wouldn't it resolve?
Yeah, you should get your copy today.
Well, yeah, but
that's interesting. I mean, well, if they're cracking down on journalism, threatening to throw people in jail for 15 years for
dissent. It's not in Russia. The website is not in Russia, so...
Who operates it doesn't matter.
Interested. Yeah.
Anyone can operate something like this. The fact is that, you know, the information is there and it's being shared.
That's interesting. Well, it obviously isn't operated by, you know, the Russians, or it would, you know, be redirected to some kind of Rickroll or the Wikipedia page for Obsidian or
it could be operated by a very brave Russian somewhere in the world or even inside Russia. There are people inside Russia who are doing so much, and it's them that I hope that they know that we have their back as well. Gila, I know you had something to say. Go ahead.
I did. My workplace is in New York City. And a couple weeks ago, around the time of the initial invasion, I was coming back from lunch and I saw a parade. I saw literally a parade of people. And it occurred to me that they were walking from the Russian mission to the UN to the Russian consulate. They were carrying Ukrainian flags and they were just walking in New York City. And the thing that we have been talking about a lot is the pervasive feeling of powerlessness and the way that that moves various people. I work in fundraising, and I had someone argue with me saying, why are you collecting money and medical supplies? Shouldn't we be sending scarves? And I said, scarves? And she said, well, it's cold there. And I said, if the humanitarian organizations we're working with are asking for medical supplies, we give them medical supplies. They didn't ask for scarves. Everybody wants to, the way that this moves people in different ways is shocking and amazing. I think the important thing is to do something.
Yeah,
no, to be part of it. And if it's putting a bumper sticker on your car, if that's donating money, if that's camping out in front of the embassy, whatever that happens to be.
We all have different ways of reacting. So if someone wants to send scarves, okay, fine. But let's focus on what they are really asking for. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, one interesting thing that I'd seen go past over the past couple of weeks was that people were seeking out online sellers like Etsy shops and eBay shops and things like that, where people would independently sell things online. And just looking at shops in the Ukraine and buying anything and putting a message to the seller, not actually expecting the product. They just want to send money. And so they're using the infrastructure that's there in the form of like PayPal and whatever else is going on these individual shops, and just to send somebody over there some money that they can then choose how to use in whatever way is best in their situation. And think stuff like that, I think, is really clever.
The Airbnb thing, too. Airbnb waived platform fees for listings in Ukraine. So people are reserving weeks at a time in Ukrainian Airbnbs. They're not going. It's just a way to get money to Ukrainian people right now.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. And also, I had heard of people using Yelp in Russia to post reviews that are actually statements against the invasion, because everything else is being blocked. You know, one thing that I found really fascinating in all this is interactions on Twitter. Basically, people from all over the world contributing what they can. And this person is an investigative journalism, Christo Grozev. And he posted something that was simply unbelievable a few days ago, basically saying, Jesus, Ukraine just killed General Major Vitaly Gerasimov. You might have heard about this. Chief of Staff of the 41 Army at Kharkiv. I believe this has been confirmed. It's a couple of days this has been said, and Western media has said it's not confirmed. I think it's confirmed. But he continues, this is not the worst part. In the phone call in which the FSB being the intelligence service of Russia, formerly known as the KGB, still known as the KGB in Belarus, the phone call in which the FSB officer assigned to the 41st Army reports the death to his boss in Tula, he says they've lost all secure communications, thus the phone call using a local SIM card. thus the intercept. His boss, who makes a long pause when he hears the news of Gerasimov's death, before swearing, is Dmitry Shevchenko, a senior FSB officer from Tula. We identified him by searching for his phone, published by Ukrainian military intel in open-source lookup apps. In the call, you hear the Ukraine-based FSB officer ask his boss if he can talk via the secure ERA system. The boss says ERA is not working. ERA is a super expensive crypto phone service that was introduced in Russia with great fanfare, guaranteed work in all conditions. The idiots tried to use the ERA crypto phones in Kharkiv after destroying many 3G cell towers and also replacing others with Stingrays. ERA needs 3G/4G to communicate. The Russian army is equipped with secure phones that can't work in areas where the Russian army operates. I will read that sentence again. The Russian army is equipped with secure phones that can't work in areas where the Russian army operates. In closing, this is the origin of the greatest military OPSEC failure of all time. Putin signed a law prohibiting soldiers from posting on social media. Then he told the military to not use foreign phones as they are insecure. The rest is history. Fascinating stories like this. We're hearing them every single day. But one thing is clear. This is not going Russia's way. This is not what they expected. And you have to wonder. I mean, superpowers never seem to learn this lesson that you cannot fight a resistance, a stubborn resistance. And even if Kyiv falls, even if major cities throughout Ukraine fall, you will never have the support of the people. You will never have their cooperation. It will be a living hell for a very, very long time. And I mean for the occupiers. And I cannot imagine that lasting. I cannot imagine the Russian soldiers saying this is acceptable to us. I mean, these are their neighbors. Many of them are related. Odessa is a city that so many Russians know. They're going to be loath to destroy it from the sea, which apparently is the plan. So militarily, this is a staggering defeat so far. And I see it getting much, much worse for the Russians.
Yeah, I really hope that there isn't just this total lack of respect for anything, and it ends up just being something that is completely rebuilt in the eye of this menacing occupier. And you know, they try to like get other you know, multinationals and people to help rebuild what's left of their so-called spoils. That is not going to happen, and people are going to make sure it doesn't.
Well, I said I was going to mention the return to shortwave. The BBC is resorting to broadcasting news bulletins over shortwave radio in Russia, and that's after the country blocked access to BBC websites. BBC announced it was bringing back the World War II era broadcasting technology in the region just hours before its sites were banned. News of the ban was also reported by Russian state news agency RIA. Shortwave radio, as we know, uses frequencies that carry over long distances and are accessible in portable sets. BBC says that shortwave broadcasts will be available on frequencies of 15735 kilohertz from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. and 5875 kilohertz from 10 p.m. to midnight, Ukraine time. News will be read in English, which the BBC says will be available in Kyiv as well as parts of Russia. And that's interesting. That's fascinating. Radio is something that is a lot harder to just cut off access to. Yeah, you can jam. You can jam signals. You can broadcast over them. But that takes a lot more effort than simply pulling a plug or rerouting a website. So there's a lesson to be learned here. Radio is certainly a powerful medium. It continues to be. And right now, going back to shortwave to get the word out, to get the truth out.
Yeah, having as many options as possible, and anything that increases the cost is a form of de-escalation. That's what we want to happen. That this is too costly to pursue because nothing, nothing else is convincing the leadership there in Russia. So it's like, you know, the power that you would need to spend jamming signals, you know, and however much you'd have to build up doing that, you're not going to get everywhere. And there will be many other modes of getting information circulating, including that in a really diverse mix. So, if that's something that is pursued, so be it. It's still a relatively widespread mode, that shortwave signal bouncing off the ionosphere. I mean, that's something you can get a far coverage for, a moderate cost. And the stakes are high enough that I think that really warrants it.
Go ahead, Alex.
You know, it's something that we ordinarily bring up on this program during fundraising, but I think it bears mentioning now, is the fact that unlike websites like Facebook, YouTube is still operational in Russia. Facebook is being blocked to some extent. I think TikTok might have pulled out or is being blocked. And so all of these websites, any kind of digital way of retrieving information, leaves behind metadata, leaves behind some kind of footprint, something in a web server access log that your IP address at this particular date and time accessed this kind of content and downloaded it to your IP address, right, to your machine. And to a large extent as well, depending upon what's being collected on the other side, even if you're using a VPN, there may be certain analytics about your machine, your fonts, your browser, your SSIDs that you're looking for, all kinds of different stuff that can enable the identification of you even without your IP address. But that just doesn't apply whatsoever to radio. Radio is a completely passive listening device that does not require the sender to create some kind of handshake or some kind of interface or even acknowledge to whom the signal is being sent. As Kyle mentions, that is absolutely the case on such a massively large scale with shortwave. When we talked about this a few weeks ago, I believe, with regard to number stations, and that's why intelligence agencies have continued to rely on them. But just radio in general, radio being broadcast from Moldova, radio being broadcast from Poland, radio being broadcast from Romania, can make such a massive impact on Russian troops and be used to get the truth to them, something that the Russian state is denying, something that, because of the massive sanction regimes that have been put in place, the Russian population can't get, and most certainly the Russian troops are not privy to what's actually happening on the other side of Ukraine, or maybe even across their own city, across Kyiv. So radio is very much a dark art, and I think can and will play a massive role in getting the word out about what is really happening on the ground in Ukraine.
And for those of you who are moved by Alex's words and believe that radio is a powerful medium, as I do, please support this radio station, because this is what you've been listening to. Give to WBAI.org, give the number to WBAI.org, or call 212-209-2950. Tell your friends, become a BAI buddy, and keep this radio station going, as all radio stations have the potential to reach people, to change lives. Hey, we're going to go out. We're going to be on YouTube in a few minutes at 8 o'clock, channel 2600. Or follow the link on 2600.com at the top of the page. We're going to go out, though, with a Ukrainian band that had an entry in Eurovision, the last Eurovision contest. They finished fifth, actually. They're called Goa, Go_A. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. And the song is called Shum, S-H-U-M. Write to us, OTH, at 2600.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Please keep listening. Keep getting the truth out. Keep supporting friends, neighbors, people far away. It's never been more important. We'll see you on Overtime and next week here on WBAI. Good night. Весняночка, весняночка, де ти зимувала? Юсеночко, накленочко, сорочечко бряла. Та моля сіною з лісі сова подудує. Заспіваю співаночко, нехай вона чує. Заплетися, що ми барвіночком, я тобі співаю.
Skies.